The kitchen went quiet. I stared at him. I think you just wounded him. I'm hoping so anyway. You know, maybe he's recovering right now. In a hospital somewhere? That's what I'm thinking. You should try to do the same. Think positive. It's better that way. Then you can have the silver lining without the cloud. I don't know. So just pretend. Use the power of positive thinking. Say to yourself, I did a good thing, and there was no downside. Your dad called the local police. I don't think there was any room for doubt. So just pretend. That's what I do. Bad things didn't happen unless you choose to recall them. He had stopped eating, and his left hand was up at the left side of his head. He was smiling brightly, but his subconscious was recalling some bad things right there and then. That was clear. It was recalling them big time. Okay, I said. It was just a flesh wound.
In and out, he said. Clean as a whistle.
I said nothing.
Missed everything by a fraction. It was a miracle.
I nodded. It would have been some kind of a miracle. That was for damn sure. Shoot somebody in the chest with a soft nose 44 Magnum, and you blow a hole in them the size of Rhode Island. Death is generally instantaneous. The heart stops immediately, mostly because it isn't there anymore. I figured the kid hadn't seen anybody shot before. Then I thought, but maybe he has, and maybe he didn't like it very much.
Positive thinking, he said. That's the key. Just assume he's warm and comfortable somewhere, making a full recovery.
What's in the shipment? I asked.
Fakes, probably. From Pakistan. We get 200-year-old Persians made there. People are such suckers.
Are they? He looked at me and nodded.
They see what they want to see.
Do they?
All the time.
I looked away. There was no coffee. After a while, you realize that caffeine is addictive. I was irritated and tired.
What are you doing today?
He asked me. I don't know.
I'm just going to read. Maybe stroll a little.
Walk the shoreline, see what washed up in the night. Things wash up?
Sometimes. You know, things fall off boats.
I looked at him. Was he telling me something? I had heard of smugglers floating bales of marijuana ashore in isolated places. I guessed the same system would work for heroin. Was he telling me something? Or was he warning me? Did he know about my hidden bundle of hardware? And what was all that stuff about the shot cop? Psychobabble? Or was he playing games with me?
Yeah, but that's mostly in the summer. It's too cold for boats right now. So I guess I'll stay inside. Maybe I'll paint.
You paint?
I'm an art student. I told you that.
I nodded, stared at the back of the cook's head like I could influence her to make coffee by telepathy. Then Duke came in. He walked over to where I was sitting, placed one hand on the back of my chair and the other flat on the table, bent low like he needed to have a confidential conversation. Your lucky day, asshole. I said nothing. You're driving Ms. Beck. She wants to go shopping.
Where?
Wherever.
All day?
It better be. I nodded. Don't trust the stranger on shipment day, I thought. Take the Cadillac, he said. He dropped the keys on the table. Make sure she doesn't rush back.
Or don't trust Mrs. Beck on shipment day.
Okay, I said. You'll find it very interesting, especially the first part. Gives me a hell of a kick anyway, every single time. I had no idea what he meant, and I didn't waste time speculating about it. I just stared at the empty coffee pot, and Duke left, and a moment later I heard the front door open and close. The metal detector beeped twice. Duke and Beck, guns and keys. Richard got up from the table and wandered out, and I was left alone with the cook.
Got any coffee? I asked her.
No, she said. I sat there until I finally figured that a dutiful chauffeur should be ready and waiting, so I headed out through the back door. The metal detector beeped politely at the keys. The tide was all the way in, and the air was cold and fresh. I could smell salt and seaweed. The swell was gone, and I could hear waves breaking. I walked around to the garage block and started the Cadillac and backed it out. drove it around to the carriage circle, and waited there with the motor running to get the heater going. I could see tiny ships on the horizon heading in and out of Portland. They crawled along just beyond the line where the sky met the water, half hidden, infinitely slow. I wondered if one of them was Bex, or whether it was in already, all tied up and set for unloading. I wondered whether a customs officer was already walking right past it, eyes front, heading for the next ship in line, a wad of crisp new bills in his pocket. Elizabeth Beck came out of the house 10 minutes later. She was wearing a knee-length plaid skirt and a thin white sweater with a wool coat over it. Her legs were bare, no pantyhose. Her hair was pulled back with a rubber band. She looked cold and defiant and resigned and apprehensive, like a noblewoman walking to the guillotine. I guessed she was used to having Duke drive her. I guessed she was a little conflicted about riding with the cop killer. I got out and made ready to open the rear door. She walked right past it.
"I'll sit in front," she said.
She settled herself in the passenger seat, and I slid back in next to her.
"Where to?" I asked politely.
She stared out her window.
"We'll talk about that when we're through the gate."
The gate was closed, and Paulie was standing dead center in front of it. His shoulders and arms looked like he had basketball stuffed inside his suit. The skin on his face was red with cold. He had been waiting there for us. I stopped the car 6 feet in front of him. He made no move toward the gate. I looked straight at him. He ignored me and tracked around to Elizabeth Beck's window, smiled at her, and tapped on the glass with his knuckles and made a winding motion with his hand. She stared straight ahead through the windshield, tried to ignore him. He tapped again. She turned to look at him. He raised his eyebrows, made the winding motion again. She shuddered. It was enough of a definite physical spasm to rock the car on its springs. She stared hard at one of her fingernails, and then placed it on the window button and pressed. The glass buzzed down. Paulie squatted with his right forearm on the doorframe.
"Good morning," he said.
He leaned in and touched her cheek with the back of his forefinger. Elizabeth Beck didn't move, just stared straight ahead. He tucked a stray wisp of hair behind her ear.
"I enjoyed our visit last night."
She shuddered again, like she was deathly cold. He moved his hand, dropped it to her breast, cupped it, squeezed it. She sat still for it. I used the button on my side. Her glass buzzed up. Then it stalled against Paulie's giant arm, and the safety feature kicked in and it came back down again. I opened my door and slid out, rounded the hood. Paulie was still squatting down. He still had his hand inside the car. It had moved a little lower.